And welcome to YudCast, episode 47. This is Head of School Dan Glass with you once again, recording live here in the Sound Lab at the Brandeis School of San Francisco. 47 is a prime number. I just checked with my colleagues, Colin Rigby, Nicholas Cole Farrell, and Jenny Rin, who are in the office adjacent to the Sound Lab at present. Prime numbers, super interesting and fun. I once did a poetry project with a colleague around prime numbers once upon a time when I had more time for such things. So 47th episode here of the YudCast, and like, oh, we'll say 45 of those 47, we're going to start out with a poem. I thought to share a poem. I've read Joseph Massey or Joe Massey's poems on the YudCast before. I know he is a poet who is very near and dear to my heart, one of the few poets currently writing whose practice is most important to my own, and certainly someone that I think about a lot when I think about space as relates to poetics. And that's to some extent what the YudCast is going to be about this week. And so I thought I'd read the first poem from his book, At the Point. This was published by Shearsman Books, I don't know, some years ago now. What was this? 2011. And this is from a couple of books that there are, I think, two books that he wrote that were very engaged with, concerned with, connected to the landscape of Humboldt County in Northern California. I thought this would be a nice poem because it speaks to the connection between space and the writing process, which I like. This poem is called The Process, and here we go. Cross-stitched outside sounds double the day's indoor confusion. How to untwine noise to see. There's the bay, highway slashed beneath, water a weaker shade of gray than this momentary sky's widening bruise. The page turns on the table, bare despite all I thought was written there. So, shout out to you, Joe Massey. Hope you are doing well. He has since writing these books has relocated to the East Coast. And I read a book of his this summer, Illocality, that's a couple years subsequent to At the Point, this book, and really loved it. Anytime I get some time to sit and read Joe's lyrics, they're really... they're very compelling to me, and his power of observation and careful connection to the world and the very detailed descriptions he has of the world around him, I just find very inspiring. So a few weeks ago here on the YudCast, I had a Brandeis alum, teacher leader, and language arts faculty member, Isaac Jacobs Gomes, on here with me in the Sound Lab to talk about his writing practice and its relationship to his teaching practice. Over the course of the conversation, Isaac mentioned that as part of an interdisciplinary sixth grade project in which the students were studying both the neuroscience and physiology of memory, as well as considering memory as it related to creative writing, the teaching team had been considering how different kinds of memory function in the school. One type of memory in particular had been of interest to them lately, called episodic memory, which is essentially autobiographical memory versus semantic memory, which is the recollection of information that we have not experienced. So when we think back to a moment and, you know, remember the sights and sounds of, you know, taking Sonia to a Warriors game or sitting in the living room in my mother's house and lighting the wood stove, which was how we heated that house. Those are episodic memories because they are particular to my experience. So in this conversation, which was super fascinating, Isaac said the team had been thinking about the way the space of school can collect and conjure information for our students, and how the classroom itself can be an aid to memory for kids. And just have to say, there's a wonderful Lynn Hajinian essay on the relationship between writing and memory called Writing, I think it's Writing as an Aid to Memory. Maybe Writing is an Aid to Memory. I think it's Writing as an Aid to Memory. Anyway, great essay there. Quick side note, it's really one of the great pleasures of working here at Brandeis that we have such a thoughtful faculty. And whenever I have opportunities to sit with folks from our teaching team, I'm reminded again how lucky I am to be part of this community. And also, I have been thinking a lot about this interdisciplinary project that they've been doing in sixth grade, and it just sounds so fascinating. My conversation with Isaac reminded me of a book I read 15 years or so ago, Gaston Bachelard's The Poetics of Space, which I read in those years in my life when phenomenological studies of domestic space were a more regular part of my reading diet, which is to say, as part of a minor in contemporary philosophy during graduate school. And of course, at the time, I'm not sure I fully was able to appreciate the freedom of those years. Although, this is a tangent, but there's a wonderful Hermann Hesse book called The Glass Bead Game, and one that he won the Nobel Prize for Literature not long after publishing it. One does not win a Nobel Prize for an individual work, obviously, but for a body of work. But it's a really interesting sort of fable about the life of the mind and the sort of seductiveness and also the danger of sort of housing learning as such in academies. And there's this notion in the Glass Bead Game of the freedom years that before one in this society that he's imagining in the context of this novel, one sort of enters into the formal space of learning, which is somewhat analogous to the academy. But before one does, there's a period of time that is set aside for learning for learning's sake or pure exploration. And I have to say, I did go into graduate school somewhat with that notion in mind. I'd read The Glass Bead Game as an undergraduate. I may have read it when I was living in Spain, and it made quite an impression on me. So I did somewhat go in being attentive to the freedom of those years. But in any case, one of the books I read during that time was The Poetics of Space. And in it, Bachelard weaves a lyrical, thoughtful engagement with how the spaces where we live shape our engagement with ourselves and the world. In particular, he also writes about how space shapes memory as well. And this is a quote: "Something closed must retain our memories while leaving them their original value as images. Memories of the outside world will never have the same tonality as those of home, and by recalling these memories, we add to our store of dreams. We are never real historians, but always near poets, and our emotion is perhaps nothing but an expression of a poetry that was lost." Well, I don't think I agree that our memories of the outdoors do not add to our store of dreams in the same way indoor memories do. I do love the notion of being always near poets in the context of memory and dreams, and the feelings we are often left with in their wake as being the echo of lost poems. It's such a beautiful idea. Now, as a person who really enjoys and finds important spending time outdoors in the context of hiking or camping, those memories are impactful and important for me as well. But I do really find that idea that the emotions we feel, you know, as you wake up from a dream, for example, is an expression of a lost poetry, such a beautiful idea. This connection of memory, between memory and space, reminds me of something that I've written about in the Word of the Week, which is my insistence on using matches to light our Shabbat candles rather than a lighter of some sort. The smell of the matches really takes me back to a sort of dreamlike set of childhood memories, mostly relating to Hanukkah, and the sense of the surrounding darkness of winter. We had a very small house in the years that these memories come from, and we had I think the house that I lived in with my father was maybe 700 square feet at the time, so very small little living room on Spalding Avenue in Berkeley. And that these memories of the smell of the matches and the shimmering candlelight. And so it's, you know, my hope for our kids that each week in striking the matches, we build new memories of home for them and for our family, new tones and new dreams. This week, I saw a similar approach to building episodic memories in stopping into Miss Callan's fourth grade classroom. I've been making my way around the school throughout these early months, trying to get a feel for each subject, teacher, and classroom. And I was struck on this day walking into fourth grade by the music that was playing, this calm, wordless melody. I don't actually know what the song was. Kids were spread out throughout the class, some sitting at desks working on computers, some laying on the carpet handwriting drafts. Others were sitting on the floor underlining and editing. The energy in the room, like the music, was tranquil as the kids each worked on the written portion of their native Californian project. As I kneeled down next to kids, I heard about their research interests, games, social hierarchies, or architecture. What I loved was that there was a special tone to the room, this tone of quiet engagement. And I have no doubt that that tone will collect and conjure important memories and dreams for those students as they continue their journey as young writers. So with that, I wish you all weekends full of poetic spaces, my friends. Hope you have an opportunity to engage with the built environment and world around you. Shabbat shalom to anybody who is listening on Shabbat. Thank you for joining us for this prime number edition of the Yudcast, and we'll see you next week.